Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in to the NOLA Drink Show. Friends, this week, I do appreciate it as always. Certainly some unsettling times here, friends. I do thank you for listening in. We're going to jump right over to our featured interview in just a few minutes. I want to give you a little bit of programming notes here. This show was taped just the other day when Bourbon Fest was supposed to be happening, and so we're going to be talking with Tracy Napolitano, executive director of the New Orleans Bourbon Festival, and Bernie Lubbers, who is the Heaven Hill global ambassador, who happened to be in town and continue with his travel plans and came to New Orleans. And one of the things that we talk about in the interview is the rescheduling of New Orleans Bourbon Fest. And we mentioned when you're hearing this part of the show, which was taped more recently, that we'd have some updated information for you. You will hear I am a board member of the charity that runs the New Orleans Bourbon Festival. And as of this time, there has not yet a rescheduled date. We're actually working on it diligently with our venue partners and city officials and everyone else we need to be working on. Hopefully we will have an announcement soon. By the time you hear this, especially if you're listening on the podcast, it might already be out there. So if that's the case, I do apologize for it. Go check out nobourbonfest.com or the New Orleans Bourbon Festival Facebook page. Again, nobourbonfest.com or the Facebook page, for the New Orleans Bourbon Festival to stay abreast of the latest information. And again, constantly changing landscape here, friends. I do urge you to listen to authorities. Listen to science, okay? Science is not a hoax. Science is not a conspiracy theory. If you believe that those things are to be the case, then you need to have your head checked. This is not the flu. This is not a cold. Now, what many of us may actually experience if we're healthy are a mild situation, a mild illness that feels like the cold and flu. This is far more serious. This virus is far more serious, and it spreads rather easily from people to people. We do see community spread going on right now. I am not a health expert and I am not a health official, but I do have half a brain in my head, and I am urging you to please listen to what you're being told to do. Now, one of the things that I do want to say here in the few moments I have before we bounce over to our featured interview again with Tracy from New Orleans Bourbon Festival and Bernie Lubbers, from Heaven Hill Distillery, is that our friends in the service and hospitality industry are about to take a beating. We've already seen at the time of this taping that the mayor of New Orleans, as well as in many other places, have curtailed, or in some cases, not so much here in New Orleans yet, but even closed bars and restaurants. That may be coming down the pike. I am being made aware of certain places that are actually planning to close this week or as early as today, even though official sanctions or official restrictions have not yet been placed. What I want to urge you to do is, if you are healthy and you're making the right decisions, if you're sick, stay home, work from home, don't expose the elderly, all the stuff that all the officials are telling us, heed those things. But if you are in the place where, you know, maybe you're able to go out, go support our service industry. I'm not advocating that you don't follow social distancing and really minimizing being out. Okay, fair enough. However, go pick up some go food, go get a go drink. We will make you aware of things out there if there are fundraising possibilities or funds set up to support our friends in the hospitality industry, because as we know, these people work on an hourly wage. Many of them do not have a social safety net. This is going to kill some restaurants. People are going to go out of business because of this over the summer. I think we know that, or even sooner. But our friends that are actually in the industry, you know, if you lose your job because your restaurant or your job is put on hiatus because a restaurant closes, you can't just go find another job right now because nobody's going to be hiring at the moment. We will share information with you. I urge you to look for ways that you can responsibly support the hospitality industry. It is the lifeblood of our economy in New Orleans. Please support those people. Please be on the lookout, and we will share more of that information with you. Again, we will also share more information with you regarding the reschedule of New Orleans Bourbon Fest. On that note, we're going to bounce over to Barrel Proof, the fine bar at 1201 Magazine Street, for our featured interview talking about bourbon and the New Orleans Bourbon Fest. Oh yeah, and we taste some bourbons because it just seemed like a good time to drink. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends, this week. As always, I do appreciate it. And as you know, we're doing a special edition of the show talking about New Orleans Bourbon Festival. And news that you probably heard, the festival has been postponed But we're gonna make lemonade out of lemons here, and that's what we're doing. We're drinking some whiskey here at Barrel Proof, 1201 Magazine Street in the lower Garden District, the LLGD, as I like to say. Thanks to them for hosting us. I'm pleased to be joined by my two terrific guests, repeat victims in both cases here on the NOLA Drink Show, Heaven Hill Global Ambassador Bernie Lubbers. Bernie, how you doing, man?
It's still Bourbon Festival in my world.
Hey, there you go, man.
It's good to be here.
This crappier place is to not have something happen, right?
Right. So we'll see. Well, we got bourbon. So
we got bourbon,
good.
Yeah.
Cool, and I'm here. It's good. I wouldn't miss it.
Sweet. Glad to have you here in town, man. And my good buddy Tracy Napolitano, who is the executive director and co-founder of the New Orleans Bourbon Festival. How are you, Tracy?
I'm getting better every day.
So, good.
And thanks for throwing co-founder
with every
the
sip
button hit me.
Yeah,
getting better with every sip.
There you go. And so I'll use Tracy's what you just said. I will take this opportunity to clarify things in the interest of journalistic integrity, of which I have none, because this is not a journalism show. This is a talk show. But also that, as most listeners know, I am a board member of the charity that puts on the New Orleans Bourbon Festival. So that is why I knew that I needed to say co-founder, because not only would your wife Barbara kick your ass, she would now kick my ass.
Yes. Yes, she would. Yes.
We have that kind of relationship on this board. But let's go ahead and start there, you guys. Tracy, and I'll kind of give you the floor, and I will clarify this. I probably gave you more information at the top of the show, because when you all are hearing this interview, we taped it on Thursday, the first day of what would have been Bourbon Festival. You all are hearing this a few days later, so any news you will have been updated on. But let's tell people kind of what's happening now and how we're working hard here and got some plans moving forward, man.
Yeah, so Bourbon Festival is supposed to happen this starting Wednesday night with our first event. On Tuesday, we were at my house. All the board was there. We were putting stuff in badges and printing VIP cards and getting it all ready. We had trailers outside full of all the gear. And then we found out via watching the news conference that all the events in the city of New Orleans had been canceled. So we kind of regrouped, got everybody together, stopped what we're doing, and started, trying to figure this thing out. And, of course, City Hall was closed because the press conference was at 6:15, so we couldn't get answers. So we made a decision to postpone the festival. The board, working with the board, the decision was made. And we put out a press release that evening. And we have since, got a message from the city that, all permits were denied because of COVID-19. So it's been official. The city has shut down events, and we have targeted a rescheduled date. So we're working with everyone now. We've got the venues on board, waiting to hear a little bit more from the hotel. But if everything comes together, we will be going off the first week in June and weekend, June 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th.
Great.
So that's our target to redo the festival.
Awesome. And yeah, just to clarify and add to what Tracy just said, that the festival was forced to make this decision because basically if we don't get a permit from the city, we don't get a liquor license, we can't actually operate an event. So
correct.
Our hands were tied, and then now we know why. And so we want to, and more of the story will come out, friends. We'll share it with you here on the show, Facebook page, and all that. And again, maybe I shared more at the top of the show. We're doing that time warp thing. But Bernie, you're here in town. You came down, and happy to have you here, man. And give us your thoughts, man. I mean, I know it's...
I'm not scared. I'm from the hose water generation. So, I'm okay. Right?
Yeah, right. You did not hear... Bernie, don't drink from the hose. You were encouraged to drink from the hose,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, you learned to let it run for a second to get the hot water and the spiders out of there.
Precisely,
and
yeah.
So I'm okay. But, I understand everything that's happened, and it's, it's fine. But, but I'm still going to come down because there's still work that I can do. That's the festival's the anchor, as I call it, the anchor event that gets me down here. But I can also do, stop by places like Barrel Proof and other bars and with our work brothers, distributor partners. There's work that I can do.
Yeah,
So I'm here. And what are you going to do? You're going to shut down your whole life, or are you going to? These are decisions you got to make hour to hour and day to day. So
it's great
to be here.
Yeah, it's good. Glad to have you here, man. And Heaven Hill's always been a great supporter of the festival. And so let me get your thoughts on just being involved with the festival and moving forward with us and all that good stuff.
Well, I remember when Tracy and Barbara came and talked to me in Kentucky the first time about it, and I've been in. I mean, what's the risk? You're going to come to New Orleans for a weekend, and there's going to be the big attraction, I think, for me and for every other distiller, I'm not a distiller, but ambassador and distillers, was this is the only other bourbon festival outside of Kentucky. So that was attractive to us. A lot of people want to have whiskey fests, but this is a bourbon fest. And so that made sense to us. Mm-hmm. So I'm in. I mean, you know, is it a huge risk? No. I mean, people are going to support our brands and let us talk about our brands at their event. Of course, the first year's always going to be a learning curve. The first several years are going to be a learning curve. Tracy and Barbara seem like wonderful people. You know, my spidey senses are good. So
I like one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's my wife. It's definitely not me. So I hear that a lot. Yeah.
So for me as a brand ambassador, it was an easy yes. And the only thing that Tracy and I were just talking about it was I said, well, I can't come every year because, you know, I call it a life sentence. They want you to come for a life sentence. So once you come one year, they want you every year. So, you know, I just let them know that, you know, I might not be there the next year. That's always my out, right? It was a lot of fun, and it was more than I expected and better than I expected. And so I've been here every year. So
okay, great.
So I wouldn't mind if it's a life sentence for me, but it's a great festival. It's in New Orleans in March. Okay.
Not bad. Now, hopefully it'll work out for you to come back in June. The weather's a little different, but, you know, the travel plans allow.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, Bernie, do me a favor. Tell people, because you were on the show with me, was it last year? It was about a year ago, right?
Yeah.
Was it 2 years ago? We got our handler over here, Steve Wilshire, who's been driving you around, man. Thank you. So 2 years ago.
It's a lot of bourbons ago.
It's a lot of bourbons ago. tell people, you know, what is a global brand ambassador do in the spirits world and in the bourbon world in particular?
So I'm the face of the brands that of Heaven Hill in the marketplace. So that goes to many, many, my job's different every day. So I talk to distributor partners because we only have a handful of salespeople to work for us. Here it's Steve covers the whole state of New Orleans, of Louisiana.
Working for a distributor.
So
right?
Working for us.
Know. Working yeah, for, yeah,
for,
a distributor,
for Heaven Hill.
Right. Yeah.
So he can only do so much as one person, one man band.
Okay.
My job is to come down and affect sales in a positive way and also train our distributor partners as well as he manages them because they're the ones who are out talking to every account. We can't talk to every account. And then we also go by certain accounts that are like that carry our brands. And also do consumer events like the New Orleans Bourbon Festival. Mm-hmm. I also talk with the media. Mm-hmm. My job straddles every, you know, communications, PR, marketing, sales, does everything. So, but my expertise is in knowing about our brands, how our brands fit. There's hundreds of bourbons now. You know, when I started in 2005, here's an interesting thing. 10 distilleries in Kentucky selling 95% of the world's bourbon. There's only one outside. That would be in Virginia. Mm-hmm. How many do you think there are distilleries do you think there are today in Kentucky?
In Kentucky? That's a great question. Has it grown a little bit? Is there a couple craft
69.
Guys
69.
Is there? Oh, I would have guessed like 30-something. Okay.
69, and there's still 10 major distilleries, but now the world's largest spirits company has a distillery there too.
Okay.
So of those 69 distilleries and 10 major distilleries, and there are 1,800 craft distillers in the United States that did not exist in 2005.
Right.
Just think about that. So the 10 major distilleries that are still there still sell 95% of the world's bourbon. So glad, thankfully, the pie got bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's a big number. So you think that there's 4,000 brands of American whiskey now between the 1,800 distillers and 10 major distillers. That's a lot. Right?
Bernie, what do you, if you know this number, what would your ballpark be? What is, or Tracy, you may know this, the 10 big guys, how much do they produce now? We have so much more.
95% of the world's
bourbon. It's still 95%.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then, and that's
because we're the only ones with the capacity.
Okay, yeah, sure.
So the 1,800 are making 1 to 3 barrels a day. We're making 1,300 barrels a day.
Gotcha.
And so that takes hundreds of millions of dollars to do. So this is an industry that there are barriers to entry.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
economies
it still
scale,
costs you
sure.
$10 million to start a distillery,
mm-hmm.
But which is a big barrier there too. Plus, you know, that we have the 3-tiered system with the distributors and all that kind of stuff. It's in, you know, then there's control markets and there's franchise markets. There's a lot to learn.
Sure.
But we still control, you know, the major distillers still control all of it, but we still have a lot of noise around us, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of competition that wasn't there before. Mm-hmm. That's good and bad.
Then these can fill two different niches, right?
Right.
And I think and Tracy, maybe you jump in on this here. How does the Bourbon Fest then, as it's grown into its fourth year, try to, you know, sort of bridge those gaps? I mean, obviously you want partnerships from the big guys, but we want to involve the little guys too, don't we?
Well, what we've done, I guess we started that last year. We added a craft section. So when we went to the CAC, we were able to activate the parking lot between the CAC and
Contemporary Art Center.
Contemporary Art Center, yeah. And the World War II Museum. And we put that as our craft tents. So
Which was really cool.
It lined. This year we're adding a fourth tent because we had more craft distillers coming. They want to come to the market. And they want to showcase their product. So that's how we've added them into the festival. When you're inside the building, you see the big booths and the big displays mm-hmm. from the major brands.
Mm-hmm. So it's a big ballpark out there, right? It's like we look at the beer thing, we look at the wine thing, have big producers, we have small producers. Mm-hmm. Don't really have a lot of middle-sized producers, though, in the whiskey world in the States, do we?
It's tough.
Because you're in that economy of scale.
It's tough.
Gray
I'd
area.
Say Angel's Envy is a okay, mid-tier yeah. one.
Sure.
I'd say that Rabbit Hole's getting there to... a deal and New Riff, but there's only a handful, and Corsair maybe. It's either going to be big or little.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
for the most part,
that makes sense.
And then you have people who are not distillers at all that you know that are non-distiller producers that source whiskeys, mm-hmm. and that's a good way to get into the business too. You know, it's all good because some of it comes from us, right? You know, we
that's
part of our business.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not our main business. We're doing less and less of that, but you know, it spreads overhead costs. And different than beer, though, is you know, they say that big beers hurt by all the craft beers, but they're still the main breweries still control the top five beers in the world.
Sure,
I mean, then
they buy up the little,
you know,
guys
and
too.
They're still making billions of dollars. But it's I get it. But for us, it's different because there's time and wood involved. Time and wood are the most expensive things, in my opinion, that a distillery is involved with. There's mm-hmm. there's wood. We spend $70 million a year in wood before we make the first drop. Mm-hmm. So $70 million in barrels. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Who's got $70 million? And that's you got to pay that every day and every week.
Right, right.
I mean, not $70 million, but over the course of a year.
Sure.
And then time. Who's got time? We do because, mm-hmm. you know, our overheads, you know, for the most part, you know, our distilleries paid for, our warehouses are paid for. We're not mortgaging our house. You know, Max Shapiro that owns our company, we're still family owned. So mm-hmm. our family isn't under the stress. We've been around for 85 years. Somebody who's just starting, they have stress.
Right, absolutely. You know, startup business. Yeah. Well, we got about a minute before we're going to take a break here. Really quick question then, Bernie, to you on that. When we talk, we'll define what source whiskey means mm-hmm. when we come back from the break. Is that like a cool thing? Like, do your distillers and stuff enjoy doing that? Because you guys have to keep your labels generally consistent, right?
Well, we don't advertise who we sell to.
But you're doing something different, right?
But we keep our whiskey for ourselves,
right.
Of course. And let's not forget, just because you buy it from us or MGP or somebody else, you can still mess it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can. You have to process it. You have to filter it. You have to do things with it. And I think that's one reason why our owner's fine with, like, you want to buy from us, fine. You can still screw it up. Just because you bought from us doesn't mean you can't mess it up.
Sure.
You can.
Well,
I'm
just asking this question because, like, mm-hmm. I come from the wine world. The last
sure.
times when winemakers are doing contract work, you know, custom mm-hmm. crush stuff for people and things, they like it because they're actually getting to do something different than what mm-hmm. their program is.
Oh, we don't even know what they're doing. It's just a buy.
They just a buy, and then
it's
it goes.
Just a buy.
And, yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, you guys, let's do this. Let's take a little break here on the show. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more about New Orleans Bourbon Festival. We're going to taste some whiskeys here, and that's pretty much the game plan for today, guys. Take a little break here on the Dollar Drink Show. Come on.
Sitting here, la la, waiting for my yaya. Oh, I'm sitting here, la la.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Yep, we're here at Barrel Proof, 1201 Magazine Street in the lower Garden District. Thanks to these guys for hosting. And we're talking about whiskey and bourbon here today, and talking about the New Orleans Bourbon Festival. And you guys, as promised, we're going to get to the drinking phase of the show, and we'll talk about some other topics. But we've got a couple interesting things to taste here. We have a Deadwood straight bourbon whiskey, and I think this is new to both you guys. Easy drinker, kind of two-year-old, yeah? Any thoughts on this?
Oh, wow. Let me taste it here.
Sure, go for it. I find just, you know, I think the price point's pretty highball friendly, as they say. And just an easy drink. I don't specifically, but I know that it's supposedly it's pretty friendly for easy pours and cocktail programs.
Bottle, so.
It's a liter bottle. Yeah, good for the well. Pretty much an easy drinker, I think.
Yeah. It's 81 proof.
Yeah.
Strange proof, but a cool proof.
Yeah.
Infringing on Eddie Russell right there a little bit with the 81. But the that's an homage, I guess.
Yeah, there you go. It's you know, from
it's the... it's two-year-old whiskey. It's so it's everything I expect. It's a little corny. And it's a little hot. But once you get past that, I mean, it's pretty dry, but it's fine.
Yeah,
I mean, it's fine. It's a young, okay,
easy drinking,
fine whiskey.
Sure, and it's meant to be, you know, less expensive and lower in proof. And so from Dave Schmier, right, who was, if I'm not mistaken, you guys said he's one of the co-founders of Redemption.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Right.
I mean, this is what you. It's exactly what I expected.
Yeah.
And it's good.
Yeah.
It's pleasant.
Easy.
And, of course, the second taste, that burn goes away, and then you're just left with the taste.
Yeah.
So it's good.
Yeah, cool. What do you think, Tracy?
I think, right, you get the corn. It's a little bit on the sweet side, but when the burn goes away, it's got a good flavor.
Yeah. Hey, nice for,
this.
Like I said, nice
I
for a highball,
right?
Night. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he's a nice summer whiskey, we'll call it. Mm-hmm. What about the rye, guys? Here we have a three-year-old rye from Deadwood also out there in Texas. Mm-hmm. Have a little sip of that.
Oh, yeah.
That. This is the
this one right here, Tracy.
Yeah, that's tumbling dice.
Yeah, that's let's do that
that's
one.
A bourbon too.
Oh, that's a bourbon.
Oh, yeah, it's a excuse me. This is a heavy rye bourbon. That's the one we're doing.
High rye. You know, I define high rye.
Oh yeah.
In my book, Bourbon Whiskey, Sour Mashed and Sweet Adventures, I say 18% and higher.
Okay.
Is high rye.
And this is 36, I think.
And so, you know, there's some people who didn't agree with me, and I said, write your own damn book, and you can define it. But yeah, this is a three-year-old. This has one more year on it. Also from Indiana. The nose is very. There's a lot more caramel on this in the nose, to me.
You get that spice from the rye, right? It's a blend of 20 barrels apparently,
mm-hmm.
and so it's a 60% corn, 36% rye, and 4% barley mm-hmm. mash bill.
And this is 100 proof, which is my favorite proof.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bottle and bond, but it's still 100 proof. And this is 60% corn, 4% barley. So that leaves the rest
rye. Yep.
It's great. It's also young, but it's nice. It's got that sweetness. It's got, you know, that corn's going away.
Right.
About 3 years, that corn goes away. And you're left with the barrel flavors of the vanilla, honey, and caramel.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to work for an old-fashioned for me pretty easily.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, you guys, let's talk about this because this is a good example that the Deadwood brand is a sourced whiskey. And sometimes I think people, and you know, you may have an opinion out there about it or not. Sometimes people think it's a bad word. Sometimes people don't. But Tracy, tell people what a sourced whiskey, what does that mean?
Well, there are companies out there that are...
We kind of talked about
it. Yeah. So it's they're purchasing it from maybe MGP in Indiana or, you know, like, you know, Heaven Hill. They're bottling it and putting their own label on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it happens... quite a bit. I mean, there are a lot of brands out there that are sourced.
Mm-hmm.
And some people start that way with they're building a distillery and they want to get a product out there quickly. Mm-hmm. They source their products and then eventually they bring their own online.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's good for them. Sometimes it not so good.
Right. Sure. Sure. Now, does it create an opportunity? Like in Bernie, you were saying sometimes people are just going to buy the raw distillate
correct.
From you guys, and sometimes you guys will store it for them. So if people say they buy the raw distillate, right, then they're going to take it, they're going to barrel
you
it.
Got to age it somewhere.
Got to age it somewhere.
Put it in the barrel and age it somewhere.
And then they're going to put their own spin on it, basically.
Right, so that's going to, you know, change the flavor of your agent in Louisiana. You're going to, you know, deal with all the hot weather here, and, you know, we don't have a lot of cold weather here, so.
Mm-hmm.
Or where are you putting it?
Yeah.
You know, you're not putting in a rickhouse, which is what, you know, this is one of the biggest things that I talk about now, is if you're not using a rickhouse, what are you using? Because
mm-hmm.
we get... They're seven stories tall. They have different levels, age differently, and that's where we get those magnificent differences in flavors of barrels that we can mingle into a nice small batch or have the differences shine in a single barrel. If they're going to age it in a just like an airplane hangar warehouse with a concrete floor, that's much different. That's a lot slower aging, and that's you don't get the airflow and all that kind of good stuff. But It's not bad whiskey. It's just different whiskey. But that's a big question you have. You don't know that with sourced whiskey of where it's aged. That's why you come to shows like the New Orleans Bourbon Festival, and you can talk to those people who represent those brands, who either the ambassador or like Dave, who owns the brand, or people who own the story. And that's where I encourage people to go and ask questions. Don't just go to the New Orleans Bourbon Festival and drink the bourbon. Go and ask questions. And the best thing you can say is, what's your house style? And then they're going to start talking. Right? Now, I can look at a bottle and tell if it's sourced, because this on the back says distilled in Indiana, bottled by. So if it says distilled in or produced by, I know that's sourced.
You have to say it. Yep.
But if it's distilled and bottled by, then that company makes it. So just looking at the words, and that's where you can go to my website, or whiskeyprof.com, like Whiskey Professor, and learn how to read a label. That's the most important thing you can do for yourself, is learn what the word straight means. What does the word bourbon mean? What does the word whiskey mean? Mm-hmm. What does the word distilled by mean? Mm-hmm. What is the word produced by, distilled in? Mm-hmm. If you know those nuances, then you know exactly how much money something's worth, what's overpriced, what's underpriced, what's fairly priced, you know? And then, you know, a lot of the craft producers, they cost a lot more money for a lot less whiskey. Still could be very much worth it, because you're investing in that company, and you know they're. That's why if you ask them about their house style, you can go, oh, I want to support you. Mm-hmm. So I know that your three-year-old whiskey or your two-year-old whiskey might be $30 or $40, where I can get it at Evan Williams that's 5 years old and 86 proof for 12, but I still want to support you because of your vision
you're doing your thing.
So that's why I encourage people to come to the festivals and ask questions, because where else can you talk to the producers and the ambassadors of them but events like this? And that's why they're important.
Let's talk about that, Tracy, because that's one of the focuses of Bourbon Fest, is getting you in front of those people.
The education piece with the seminars, we actually had this, well, for this weekend, we're going to have some sessions on sourced whiskey, what corn brings to the table, things like that. So people can understand, you know, how the bourbon is made and where it's coming from. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, we're going to have that, you know, when we reschedule, we'll have that. But we want people to get educated. You'll be able to talk to the people that either make it or sell it, you know, so they understand what they're drinking and how, where it's coming from. And even with the program we do with our awards, it's the consumer that's judging. We don't bring in professional judges. We want the people buying it, drinking
it. Which is a fun aspect of the festival.
To pass the judgment, well, yeah, because you guys have won a bunch of stuff.
So. Well, I'm just generally, yes.
And Steve's very happy with that.
Generally, yes.
And that's a great point. You guys are talking about education. And again, I think my background is stronger in wine than anything else, having worked in the wine industry for a long time in California. And you can read a lot into a label. You can also BS people a lot in certain ways. And one of the things that I think we know, like from the wine world, is the term estate gets thrown around constantly, and that doesn't necessarily mean crap. Mm-hmm. When you talk about the old world, that might be a different story, because you're actually growing what you're supposed to grow at your property, because it's proper for the terroir and the sort of cradle-to-grave consideration of production. But if you tell me that you have this really fine estate-grown Chardonnay in Lodi, you shouldn't be growing Chardonnay in Lodi. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, people use these terms and they'll come in and they'll into a tasting room and say, well, I want to taste what you have that's estate. It doesn't necessarily mean anything. Mm-hmm. So understanding what's on a label and where things come from, I think, is critical. Now, with so many brands out there, right? And like we're talking in the whiskey world and the number of craft distilleries, there's just a lot of stuff out there
like
for
the
people
word
to
small
process.
Batch or single barrel. People have taken that as a premium product.
Mm-hmm.
And those were just, you know, words that Booker No from Jim Beam, he came up with the term small batch just to differentiate what Elmer T. Lee was doing over in Ancient Age with Blanton's as a single barrel. And he said, well, this is a small batch. It still doesn't really mean anything. It is a great way to describe stuff, but just like estate, it doesn't mean that.
It doesn't mean
But a lot of newer producers will say it's a small batch. But and in the consumer's mind, that means $40 or $50 is okay.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Sure.
I mean, we're happy with that.
Sure,
we don't happen to have a $50 bottle of bourbon, but but the we will one day. Right? But the you know, certain words just become a buzzword,
right?
And some people glom onto that.
That's my point exactly. You guys, let's do this. Let's take a little break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more with Tracy and Bernie. Come on back now. Every All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian D is here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. We are here chatting with Tracy Napolitano, who is the executive director and co-founder of the New Orleans Bourbon Festival, and Bernie Lubbers, who is the global ambassador to Heaven Hill, or four, not two. You're four. You have papers from
with
them
two,
that
four,
you carry diplomatically,
I have,
right?
I have the letters of transit.
Okay, yes. That's exactly what we need here. So we're tasting some stuff now. We talked a little bit about the festival. These guys are going to stick around for our podcast-only segment, Another Shot with Noel Drinks, that we'll have coming up right after this. If you're listening on the radio, go to noeldrinks.com. You can find the podcast-only segment there as well. Let's just bounce into some whiskey here, guys. So
I'm loving the nose on this.
Yeah, so what do we, Tracy, you brought us one of the barrel selects from the festival, man.
Yeah, so this is the Bellmead Sherry Cask that we picked for the festival. We did 22 barrel picks this year. They've been sold throughout the city for the last 4 months. So this is one
that
we
is
did.
Amazing. Hats off to you. That is amazing.
Thank you. We've got a bunch of great partners that allow us to do that. So
cool.
And I just Steve just informed me that we're almost done with our Elijah Craig barrel pick. That he's going to let us pick another one. So. Hopefully we can get it here before the rescheduled date. So
okay, cool.
Yeah. But so yeah, we went around Kentucky and we did some picks out of Virginia. We did Tennessee, and we just brought them. We have nine local partners that will sell all the picks we do, and it's been great. People are running around town. A lot of posts about how good the picks have been, and we actually have collected one of every pick, and we are going to raffle them off for the charity.
Oh, cool.
That's so okay. We'll be
Barrel Picks
that out
is a great
soon.
Way to help the brands out, to help us build brands and get brand loyalty. So thank you for doing that for us and for all the others. I mean, it's a lot of people don't know the brands like Bellmead. It's out of Nashville. It's a cool place to go visit.
Mm-hmm.
The nose on this is, I'm kind of a sucker for some sherry finish, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's just, I don't even have to drink this and enjoy this.
You just keep smelling it. It's mm-hmm. so good.
So just so we're clear, too, you guys, because we mentioned it's aged in a sherry cask. So obviously something that held sherry before. And in this case,
it's finished in a sherry.
Or finished.
Finishes usually are for months at a time.
Right.
Not the years. After it was aged, this one probably for about 4 years, I would think, or 5 years, whatever.
And that's going to be an American oak, typically.
In a brand new charred oak barrel, and then finished.
And then so finished in a sherry cask. And so typically, mm-hmm. I see, is this fair to say that this is an Oloroso sherry?
Oloroso,
which we're not going to
get
into that specifically, what that means. Yeah. But that's kind of the most common one. I see more Oloroso aging than other sherry styles.
And most of your scotches are finished in Oloroso sherry cask.
Yeah, it's going to impart more of a flavor.
Back in the day. So,
yeah it's going to impart more flavor.
I just tasted it. It's a wonderful whiskey. It's it's not even that desserty. I would drink this, and a lot of finishes I would do as a dessert or a digestif or whatever, even though it's not. But this is a great sipping whiskey.
Yeah,
and when we pick these, we bottle them mostly at Cask Strength. So we have a few that are.
Okay.
That companies don't do, but we do most of them at Cask Strength.
Where are we 61? At on that?
This is 61.1, I believe.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, percent. So,
percent, yes.
Just so people know.
102.4 proof.
Right. Very nice. So let's. What'd you pour for us here, Bernie?
This is a Larceny barrel proof. This is a fairly new product out of Heaven Hill. There, a lot of people know Larceny. Larceny is a wheated bourbon, and it is our...
Tell people what that means if they don't know.
Yeah, wheated bourbon recipe has no rye in it. We use wheat, barley, and corn. So this has 20% wheat in it. It has a little bit higher percentage of wheat than not that much higher. But what wheat does is it brings the sweetness of the corn and the barley more forefront. So when you think of a wheat bourbon, it rhymes with sweet, and wheat is sweet. So it's going to be front of your palate. There's going to be none of that rye, caraway seed in the back of your palate. It's a very small percentage of the bourbon category. 90% of your bourbons are bourbon ryes. This is a bourbon wheat.
Are we seeing more of that?
It's only, yes, we are. And we also make a wheat whiskey, or as Stewie Griffin would say, wheat whiskey, that is a Bernheim wheat whiskey. So that even has more. It's 51%. So it's not a bourbon. It's a wheat whiskey.
Uh-huh.
And we make five different recipes at Heaven Hill. But this is our bourbon wheat. It's the old Fitzgerald recipe. Brand. This is the small batch version of Old Fitzgerald, which is an iconic brand that Pappy Van Winkle made famous back after Prohibition. This happens to be barrel proof Larceny's. This is 6 years old. And this particular one, you can read the front label there. What's the proof on there, Brian?
It is, where am I at here? 123.2.
So 123.2. So It's a big boy.
Yeah, tell people if they don't know too, and I think most people do. But what when we say barrel proof, what does that mean?
Barrel proof means we dump a few hundred barrels together. That's what we use for our small batch. You say, well, that doesn't sound very small, but we have 1.7 million barrels, so a couple hundred barrels out of 1.7 million is pretty small.
I can't do that now, but I'm going to go with
it. We use 6-year-old barrels for this, it is what it is. So we dump it, and whatever, you know, each barrel is going to be a little bit different proof, depending on where it comes from in the rick house, anywhere from 110 or 12 up to 140-something. This happened to all the hundreds of barrels came out to 120. 23. So it is what it is. So that's the cool thing. So each batch is different. So we code the barrels, like our Elijah Craig barrels. We code this, and people have gone to our website, heavenhilldistillery.com, and are able to follow what releases these are. So we do A is the first release of the year. So, and then one would be the month. And then you have the year, which is 20.
Okay.
So this is that's what the code is. So we have a way to. Nobody cared about this stuff 5 years ago, no. And then people were like, "Oh, what, this release is better than this." So we found a way to code it.
Code it,
and the customers tell you what they want. Right?
Yeah.
It's like when you do your festival, people are like, "We'd rather have this or this or this," and you listen. You know, we're in the bourbon business, not the bourbon charity, by
sure.
the way.
Absolutely.
So we do listen to our customers of what makes it better. So
well, let's do this, you guys, because we got about 2 minutes until we close out the radio portion of the show. Excuse me, Tracy. Tell people how to connect with the festival.
So NewOrleansBourbonFestival.com.
Oh. Yeah, I got that too.
NewOrleansBourbonFestival.com.
Barrel proof, baby.
NO Bourbon Fest on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
And we'll be on the lookout for official announcements of postponed date and all that good stuff.
We will either have it out this afternoon or tomorrow morning.
And,
but
and
it's,
as people
it's
are hearing it, it'll be
so it will be out already. Yes,
yeah.
So,
we will maybe have mentioned this at the top of the show.
We're gonna try to make it even better because give you something more because we had to postpone the festival.
Yeah, we're gonna be working on that pretty hard. And Bernie, tell people where they can connect with Heaven Hill, man.
They can find Heaven Hill at Heaven Hill Distillery, all one word, .com. And you can go on a 360-degree Rick House tour. You can learn a lot about our brands and whiskey and bourbon in general from that site. It's not just our brands, but it's a great site. And by the way, you should check every distillery site out, but especially ours. We put a lot of effort and a lot of investment into our heavenhilldistillery.com site.
Hey, and I want to make sure that we know before we close the radio portion of the show here. You have a Mellow Corn shirt on, man.
Yes.
And so we'll have to taste that because I'm always
a fan.
That has
the
that
only
has a,
bottle
that
of
has
Bond
a place.
Corn whiskey in the world. It's a Tigger. It's a Tigger. It's the only one.
Yeah, there you go. It fills a role, man. Yeah, Tracy, go ahead.
Well, we'll pour you some at our house. I got about 4 or 5 bottles at the house.
Okay, right.
I'm a fan. I love Mellow Corn.
I think I can see the one on the bar here.
Without Mellow Corn and aged corn whiskey, there would not be bourbon today because when it got down here to New Orleans, this is the connection. When it was aged a little bit, after the 9 months or 10 months it took to get down here, it had a different color and flavor to it, and that is the pointed us in the direction of what bourbon was going to be. If it wasn't for aged corn whiskey, we would not have bourbon as we know it today. There would not be a New Orleans Bourbon Festival. I wouldn't have a job. We wouldn't be sitting
there.
Here.
You go. All right, friends. We'll circle back on that. These guys are sticking around for another shot with Noel Drinks. So if you're listening on the radio, friends, go to the website noeldrinks.com. You'll hear the continued conversation.
Mellow Corn,
and,
Mellow Drinks.
If you are listening on the radio, friends, remember to be kind to one another. Use your turn signal. And until next time, if I can get Bernie to quiet down here. Until next time, cheers, y'all.
Become just like the company.
All right, everybody, up another shot with Noel Drinks. Thanks for listening, and friends, as always, I do appreciate it. Again, a programming note here. We taped this show, or the main interview portion of the show, with Tracy and Bernie on, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was on March 12th or thereabouts. So this was in the midst of when the New Orleans Bourbon Festival had been postponed. As we noted, I'm a member of the board of directors for the charity that puts on the festival. And yeah, so it was that Thursday that the festival was supposed to be taking place that we actually taped this show. So again, some of the conversation is not necessarily framed by what's going on here today when you're hearing the podcast. More on that after we conclude our featured interview with Tracy and Bernie. Going to bounce back over to Barrel Proof. And when they do reopen, please be sure you patronize them. The very fine whiskey-driven bar run by LeBlanc and Smith, 1201 Magazine Street. Here we go. Yep, another shot with Noel Drinks. We're here at Barrel Proof and 1201 Magazine Street. Thanks for letting these guys host us. We're going to wrap it up here because they are open for business, friends. But we're chatting with Bernie Lubbers, global brand ambassador for Heaven Hill, and Tracy Napolitano, who is the executive director and co-founder of the New Orleans Bourbon Festival, fourth annual, and that is going to go off soon. Postponed dates. We'll have all that news for you if we haven't given it to you already. Let's talk. So we got another barrel select here, Tracy, that we're tasting. That tell us, how does the barrel select thing work a little bit more with the festival?
So we go to Kentucky. We did some, well, this one is Balcones in Texas. We went to Virginia. We went to Vermont. So we go all around the country. Any distillery that will say you can have a barrel pick, we'll go do it. And we go to the distillery. We do a couple local, but we like to go to the distillery.
Do you take people with you?
I do. I have a team of four people, and sometimes we let Steve Akeley come. But that's always
the
question.
Colonel.
It's always question when we bring Steve with us, but you know, but yeah, we go with a team of people. Some mostly three or four people. Some we've done one that we had like six or seven people with us.
Okay, now that I'm on the board, I'm coming as an ex officio member.
Well, of
all
course,
right? I won't have a vote. I'll just come.
Yeah,
if that's cool.
You know, when we did the Whistle Pig, we had a couple of contest winners come with us, bartenders. Local here from Tales of the Cocktail. So,
oh, that's so, some, nice. So yeah, a that's clown cool. Like me can come along.
Yeah, a clown like
saying.
You can definitely okay, come cool. along. But we go. We you know, they put out the you know barrels. I think we chose from three at when we were at the Rick House in Heaven Hill.
Mm-hmm.
So and then we you know we pick them. They come. They bottle them. Send them to New Orleans, and we get our retailers to sell them for us, and we enjoy them. They're you know I think we do a pretty good job at it. So.
So, and this works where you'll go out to the distillery. Typically, you'll go out to the distillery, but sometimes they'll send samples here, right?
A couple times we'll do it in New Orleans, but we prefer to go to the distillery. We like to shoot pictures and promote not only that we did the barrel pick, but promote the distillery we're at while we're doing these barrel picks.
So you select what you want, and they give you a choice of things. Then you say, yeah. We want this one, and then they bottle it for you, and we get a special label put on it, and that's how that generally works?
Yeah, they'll put a sticker on it that says, you know, hand-selected by the New Orleans Bourbon Festival, things like that. So
cool. You know. Is this something you guys like doing at Heaven Hill?
Absolutely, yeah. We do a barrel program for Elijah Craig and for Lars Snead, and we do a similar thing, and it's a great way to promote and build a brand. Building brands is hard. I love helping building brands. You know, but you take a brand from zero, which Larceny was in 2012 when it came out, zero cases a year, and you want to build it. We all want to be a million-case brand, I mean, sure. Which is still small. You know, when you think that, you know, like Jack Daniels is 25 million cases, you know, that. But, you know, that you want to be a successful brand.
Mm-hmm.
And one way to do that is to people pick their own barrel. It's their one. There's 200 bottles or so of the only whiskey you'll ever... That's the most rare whiskey in the world. It's 200 or something.
Sure, right.
So it's pretty cool. This has another incredible nose. This has, a cotton candy. Cotton candy. This is a malt whiskey. Balcones is one of my favorite distilleries because they also make corn whiskey. Okay. You know, they do a lot of corn whiskey there, and because mellow corn, we were just talking about, is a mellow corn, is a corn whiskey. They're very innovative with what they do, and malt is, you know, is a sweet grain. Parker Beam, who is our master distiller for over 56 years, malt to him has that biscuity quality. You know, people in the South know biscuits, right?
Sure,
so it's more of a tactile texture thing.
Yep.
And he says it gives it not only a sweetness, but if you don't have a lot of malt in your product, you won't get that biscuity quality. So this has that.
Well, when I talked to Balcones about picking a barrel, I wanted to do their bourbon. And they're like, well, we're only doing the malt. I'm like, you know what? We're on our way to the LSU-Texas game. We're going to pop on in.
Yeah, we knew, get
we'll
this
pick
in
a barrel.
Get
I got to get
here.
The LSU
get
thing
it
in
there, man.
Since we are the national champions. So, but yeah. So, you know, we went and picked it. And we had a great time there. And we love what we picked.
Is it corn in this, Tracy, or is this all malt?
All malt, I believe.
So it's 100% malt.
But wait, I'm going to let you, because my wife's an LSU alum. So I'm going to let you actually get in the line. Get in the line of what she said.
Go Tigers?
No. You said that getting it out of Texas, but because we own.
Oh, that's right. When they sent us, said they were going to do the label in purple and gold, I said, well, you know, perfect. Put that on the label because, you know, we own the Texas football school.
Normally we wouldn't get that political on this level, but we did. We just did. So this isn't the one that saw some Hungarian oak, is it?
No, that was. No, this is the one, actually.
Yeah.
It's European oak.
It's Hungarian oak.
Yeah, this is the one, yes.
Yeah, and actually, because it's interesting because you get that toffee coffee note, which typically comes from Hungarian oak.
I get mocha out of it, so it's...
Same idea.
Yeah. You get that...
Really interesting.
I always like to say cacao.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be upscale.
There
you
go.
When you talk about finger tasting out. Notes.
Oh, coffee and toffee out. Wasn't good enough?
Cacao, okay. No, cacao.
So, so you guys, I'll ask you guys one last question, and then I'll let you go, because I think it's an interesting, and Tracy, we touched on this about a month ago on the show, but since you're here, Bernie, we've talked about this sort of landscape. We've got the 10 big houses, and we've got the whole bunch of other little houses. Mm-hmm. What does your gut tell you? Where do you see this world going? Kind of the same? Do we see this kind of beer thing where we see more mergers happening and acquisition?
Well, obviously, if a brand has an attractive price point, which most craft distillers do, you know, it's hard to have a under $40 bottle as a craft house.
Yeah, because of your overhead, sure.
Just because it costs more. So, you know, it's hard for us. Like Evan Williams is a $12 to $15 bottle. Well, that, you know, we can't just premiumize that immediately. But if you can buy a brand that it's $40 or $50 or $60, that's an attractive profit point. And of course, they can't make the whiskey that small. But if you all of a sudden, if we buy it, and we haven't bought any bourbon, so we kind of think we do a pretty good job of making it. We don't have to buy any. But you know, if you're going to buy an Angel's Envy or buy a Rabbit Hole or something like that, it's attractive to have a good price point. And then knowing that their overhead just went away. You know, it's all gone.
Mm-hmm.
So now. You know, it fit in well with that particular supplier's portfolio, which didn't have a bourbon before. So that's where this comes in. But you also have to have something set up. It's nice to have a visitor center where you have a loyalty thing coming in. And so that you're going to find that places that get bought out either have a visitor center or a visitor's component, have a nice, attractive price point, and are at a certain volume to where you can build on that's enough, but you can build on.
So do you think we'll see more acquisition?
I mean, you'll see more, but you'll also, unfortunately, there's 1,800 of them. You're going to see about 900 of them go out of business in 5 years.
Right. Yeah. Okay. What are your thoughts, Tracy?
I think we're going to see... As long as the boom keeps going, we're going to see more craft distillers come up. We're going to see a lot of them go away. I mean, and the big houses are going to continue to do what they do. But, you know, we haven't seen a lot. Lately we've seen some acquisition. Rabbit Hole, I think TX Whiskey got bought out. Yeah. So you're seeing Jefferson's got bought out by – so you're seeing a lot of that starting to happen now. So.
Yeah. And don't we see we see a lot of the smaller guys are not just coming out doing one or two spirits, right? They're doing a broader. So everybody's going to start with the vodka. We don't have to get into this.
Or gin.
It's easier. Gin.
Because yeah,
it's easier to start. You don't age it.
Or rum.
Right, exactly. Or rum.
And sell right away.
Right.
But they're under pressure. They're under a lot of pressure.
Well, you got to get some on the shelf, right?
Yeah, yes,
and
yes.
I get that. But I think we're seeing a lot of the small guys are making 5, 6, 7, 8 SKUs, right, as opposed to coming out with one or two products.
Plus, they're figuring it all out. They haven't done marketing in their... Probably, depending on who they have work in there, if it's, you know, I don't know, you know,
sure.
They're all different. Each one's a different scenario.
Yep.
But they learn quick, and you know, you can have a lot of passion, but you still have to make something that's good. And everybody realizes that younger whiskey, and like this Balcones is 2 years old. That's not old, but it's probably a $40 bottle, right?
$79.99.
There you go. So two-year-old, $79.99. But people kind of, and that's one thing that I keep coming back to it to promote you, Tracy, but that's okay. There's reasons you come to festivals, and there's reason you go to meet the distillers and the ambassadors is to find out, why does this cost $79? I might spend $79 for a two-year-old if I get to talk to the distiller, if I get to talk and find out what they do and how they do it and why it's so expensive. But you also have to appreciate Heaven Hill and other large distillers who are able to put out a five-year-old product for $13. Mm-hmm. And just because we have a $13 product doesn't mean it's not good.
It's an economy, really good. It's an economy
of
scale.
It could be superior to that. So don't just look at price. I mean, that's why we have these festivals, and that's why I think it's important for me to come to these festivals and be there, is to educate people.
Sure. Got it. Bernie, tell people one more time where to connect with Heaven Hill.
HeavenHillDistillery.com.
Beautiful. And on all the interweb, socials, all that stuff. So
Heaven Hill Distillery on everything.
Cool. Tracy, New Orleans Bourbon Festival.
NewOrleansBourbonFestival.com, NO Bourbon Fest on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
And we look forward to seeing you for the fourth annual coming up.
Yep.
All right, friends. Hey, I'll be back with my parting shot. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening to the show, friends. I do appreciate it this week, as always. And again, on that programming note kind of thing, you heard this. This was taped about the 12th of March, I think I said at the top of this previous segment, and that's about right. It was when Bourbon Fest was supposed to be happening. And a part of what we were hoping to do when we did this, we had to make the decision to postpone Bourbon Fest. As a board member, I'm part of that decision-making process. The charity Kids Can NOLA, a very fine charity, and it was very difficult, the situation, because we were not getting necessarily a lot of direct answers from the city. And the Tuesday night before it was supposed to start, we didn't have a permit from the city for an event. And if we didn't have that permit from the city, we couldn't get our alcohol permit, blah, blah, blah. I'll spare you a lot of it, but it was a difficult decision. We had several emergency meetings to decide what we wanted to do or needed to do, really. And ultimately, we made the decision to postpone. We were hoping to be able to bring you postponed dates. That's still on hold as we see kind of what transpires here, working with the venues, partners, and other folks about when and where, or really when, that we can reschedule the event. So that'll get out to you as soon as possible. Of course, the decision was not taken lightly. And what I want to say here is that there was a lot of backlash, and I get it. People were frustrated. There were already people actually in town, including Bernie Lubbers, who was our featured guest that you heard in the interview, was already here. And, you know, made lemonade out of lemons, as I've been saying a lot of lately, doing some other stuff around work in the market, so on and so forth. Not saying it was all lemonade to be on this show, but you get the idea. And a lot of people didn't understand what was going on. The charity and the festival were not in position, of course, to say, because we weren't getting answers from the city. And a lot of people were really nasty. And this is kind of what I want to get to here in the parting shot, is just simply, you know, especially now as we're deeper into this crisis and into this situation, now more than ever, cooperation and understanding are critical to how we interact with each other and how we behave. Good decision-making, listening, as I said on the last podcast, to competent officials. I will let you draw your own conclusions to who I mean and what I mean. I think I mentioned somebody there in the White House that I would view as incompetent. But listening to competent officials and doing what we need to do to demonstrate personal responsibility through this situation. A lot of tough decisions to be made. A lot of mistakes are going to be made as we make these tough decisions, but they actually have to happen. And people are typically trying to do their best. And simply with the Bourbon Fest, we were trying to do our best to make the best decision that we felt was both right. I mean, one, our hands were somewhat tied with getting a permit, but also some people were saying, hey, they waited, we waited until the last minute just to keep money. That, of course, is not the case. We're doing this for a charity. The charity will lose money because of the fact that we actually had to postpone or maybe even cancel, depending on how things play out. Don't want to use the C word. That's what we keep saying. We're talking about postponing, and I'm very hopeful that we will be able to do that and reschedule this year sometime. But that was never the intent. And people sent a lot of nasty emails and did a lot of things. And assuming that somebody, a charitable run organization that puts on a festival, assuming that we were doing this as a scam because we wanted to keep your money and not put the festival on, I mean, what kind of fucking shit is that, to be honest with you? Of course we want to put on the festival. It's beneficial financially for the charity, and it's something that we love to do and something that we wanted to do. This decision was not made lightly. This decision was made because we could not actually legally proceed with the festival. We didn't have the permitting, and we also were considering, of course, the safety and the well-being of everyone that would have attended, all of our partners, restaurants serving food, these sorts of things. And that was all very new in the conversation, but it was something we actively discussed as a board, that safety was preeminent in this as well. So I guess what I'll tell you, I don't really have much of a take-home message other than just, you know, don't be an asshole and listen to the advice that you're actually supposed to listen to. We need cooperation. We need love right now. We don't need dickheadedness, to be frank with you. Being a little, how shall I say, crass during this parting shot, but there you go. That's kind of where we stand. Friends, please take care of one another. Please do what you're supposed to do. Please demonstrate responsibility. Please understand that your actions affect everyone, not just you. We're going to be back with a new show very, very soon on podcast, where we're going to be talking about some ideas and effects and other considerations as it relates to the coronavirus and the hospitality industry with Robert LeBlanc, who is the founder and creative director of LeBlanc and Smith Restaurant Group. And we'll also be joined by Ali Grebe, their director of development, who's done some extraordinary work researching ideas, things, resources, things you need to have in hand if you're an employee in the hospitality industry, really any industry that's been laid off, and some ideas if you're a business owner, really any small business owner, just not a restaurant or bar or other hospitality industry owner, things you need to have in hand if you're going to try and work with the Small Business Administration to get grants or loans and that sort of thing. That'll be our next show, and that will be out very shortly, friends. Take care of each other. That's our parting shot. Here's to you.